are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Countdown to kickoff is on. We're breaking it down. We've got an all-star cast on the program today. Teddy Covers will join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. Warren Sharp returns to the rotation. Breaking down tonight's and Sunday's NFL contest. We're talking college football with Joe Lisi. We're going for the two on the program. Today's the Houston Texans getting 6 points against the Cincinnati Bengals. The total is an even 38 right now. Deshaun Watson gets the start for the Houston Texans. The sports books have been a little stingy with the props this morning. Normally, they unleash the props around 10 a.m. or so. Because of the unknown and the variables coming into tonight's football game, the sports books really don't know how to handle this contest tonight. Deshaun Watson making his first ever start. Cincinnati Bengals coming off a shutout loss at home. Their offense was putrid. Houston's offense was putrid. So the props that we do have, they're all shaded a little bit light, a little bit low, as there's always that overreaction after week one. And what happened in week one often has zero correlation in what happens in week two in the National Football League. So we're going to be breaking it down. Teddy Covers steps up and in. We've got Warren Sharp, so we're going to have varying opinions about this football game. I like to get multiple opinions. Second opinion. Second, third, and fourth opinion. But, of course, we all know the final and definitive opinion is Cameron 2 Drew's pick. Whoever Cameron 2 Drew's on, we fade. So we'll find out who Cameron 2 Drew likes a little bit later on. We know who this. We know who he's going to like. He likes Deshaun Watson. Is it rocket science? I like Deshaun Watson, too. But do I like the Texans plus the points? Stay tuned to find out. We got a couple of good props, though, actually. We tweeted one out earlier as far as the sacks are concerned. We'll get to that later on in the program as well. But we've got some great guests on the show, so let's get right down to business. We're in football mode right now, but it's been a real wild ride as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. And tensions and frustrations are at an all-time high right now for teams that know that they won't be in the hunt for the Red October and the World Series trophy. All right. When you're playing out the string, man, it's a long season baseball. I was a post-game show host for the Montreal Expos. And let me tell you, man, I wasn't even playing. I wanted to kill myself. You know, like by the time we got into September and stuff and the Expos were 12 games out, it was freaking brutal, man. There's Sunday football going on and I got to watch an Expos and a Milwaukee Brewers game. And I got to take calls about the game after the fact. It wasn't a lot of fun, right? And let me tell you, the players weren't having a lot of fun either at that stage of the year, and which leads us to the Detroit Tigers. The Detroit Tigers haven't had a very fun year this year. Whatever could go wrong has basically gone wrong for the Tigers. Now Verlander's not even there anymore. The Tigers, as we know them, sort of collapsing right now, and they're playing out the string. So frustrations are a little bit high. You got the Cleveland Indians who hit blackjack yesterday. They get to an even 21 wins, 18-3 on the run line for the record. But, you know, the Tigers are playing the Indians, so of course the Tigers are going to be in a bad mood, right? So the umpire, Quinn Wolcott, one of many jerk-off douchebag umpires in Major League Baseball. So he turfs Ausmus, and he turfs the catcher, McCann, of the Detroit Tigers, arguing over balls and strikes, a little bit extreme. Toss the manager and the catcher, really? But Major League Baseball umpires and their arrogance and their egos are out of freaking control. So a couple of pitches later, after the catcher's out, Buck Farmer comes in. So Buck Farmer's on the hill, and now John Hicks is behind the plate, if you're keeping up with this. All right, so anyways, pitcher-catcher, all right, Buck Farmer and Hicks. Ausmus and the original catcher got tossed. So two pitches after they got tossed, Farmer throws a fastball that Hicks really didn't seem to try to catch all that much, and it plunked the umpire. The umpire went down, okay? And the umpire goes down, and the catcher on the Tigers showed zero interest, all right? He sort of got up, looked, and just walked towards the mound after the fact. Right away, Wolcott could be seen, the umpire, asking the other umpires, do you think they just did that on purpose? And basically, the Cleveland Indian broadcast said they just did that on purpose. It's blatant. Now, Ausmus is freaking out. That's, you know, it's an insult to our integrity and stuff like that. Now, if you watch the play, and we can't play it because Major League Baseball will have us a shot. I guess we could play it, but I'll probably get fired. No, we couldn't play it because I would play it, but I couldn't force the people in Master Control to play it. Do we have a picture at least? Hey, good stuff, guys. Hey, the guys in the booth have been on top of their game this week, A game. So nevertheless, so he's like, hey, did they do it on purpose? And yeah, I think they did it on purpose, personally. If you look at the play, when you see it bang, bang, it's like, I don't know, the ball kind of got away from them. The Tigers are saying that they expected a changeup, but a fastball came. So it threw the catcher off. Yeah, it threw the catcher off. You see the catcher really didn't make much of an attempt to catch the baseball. I think they did hit the umpire deliberately. Now, we've seen this in little leagues before, and I got to be honest with you. I grew up playing hockey. I once shot a puck at a referee before when I was a teenager. He was a bad ref. You know, he really pissed me off. I was a goalie, you know, all game, and finally I just shot the puck at him. I didn't take a slap shot, but I shot the puck at him. Whatever. It is what it is. And I personally believe, all right, I personally believe that it's okay. I don't have a problem with it. Listen, I don't think like soccer referees should be stabbed and attacked on the field and stuff like that, like they are in Argentina. But without being stated, there's a code to the game, all right? Everybody polices themselves. There is a code. Major League Baseball umpires, I know you think you're above the game. You are not above the game. You are part of the game. So if everybody else on the field is playing to these rules, that if you're a jackass, you're going to get hit with a baseball, then I don't have a problem with the umpires being part of this. You guys are part of the game. You're on the field. You need to be held in check as well. If somebody's running their mouth, if you're Sue Pwig's acting like a jackass, somebody plunks them. That's the way it works. You know what, Walcott? You were acting like a jackass, and you deserved to be plunked with the baseball. No harm, no foul. You're wearing a bunch of gear. It was a little bit of a message. Hey, jackass, people aren't paying money to come and watch you umpire a baseball game. All right, Major League Baseball umpires do a great job, but they're also the most arrogant and self-centered and personally vindictive out of all the officials of major professional league sports. So while, you know what, I'm sure a lot of the pinko commies are going to have a problem with an umpire getting hit with a baseball, if it was me, I would have hit him in the face. Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues.
In 2016, Scott Engel predicted an impressive second season from Melvin Gordon. Jake Seeley recommended Jordan Howard. Bobby McMahon forecasted a Jay Ajayi breakthrough. George Kurtz saw a big year coming from Matt Ryan. And Joe Galina picked Rishard Matthews as one of his top sleepers. These predictions turned fantasy owners into champions, and the same crew returns this year with more savvy calls in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package at rotoexperts.com. Don't miss the calls that create winners. Register now and enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
Game time decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continuing. I'm fired up for the show right now. I'm all fired up about, you know, we're in football mode, but I really enjoyed watching the umpire get hit. Does that make me a bad person? You know, like I said, I would have hit the guy in the face, right off the face mask with a fastball. Bang. Like, you know, I stand by this. Umpires, you guys think you're above the game. You're on the field with everybody else. You need to be held in check, all right? Major League Baseball umpires have been so out of control the last couple of years with their personal stuff and their attitude. No one's paying to watch Walcott go, all right? And big deal, dude. You got a bunch of padding on. Oh, boo-hoo, I got hit in the shoulder with a baseball. You know what? You're a big wuss for going down, actually, in the first place. Suck it up. Hey, you don't want to get hit with a baseball. Don't turf the manager and the catcher out of the baseball game, jackass. All right? That's not your job. Your job is called balls and strikes. Because I got to tell you, you know, I used to be for like humans and say I don't want like technology and robots to replace everybody, but I've come around on this. People are stupid and just a waste of space, all right? So, like really, it's to the point now, I don't even like when I have to deal with a human on the phone. I'd rather just push a bunch of buttons because I end up just yelling at the humans. So, where I'm going with this is, let's just fire all the Major League Baseball umpires and make the umpires robots. Let's bring in Ted Savransky right now. Okay, Teddy Covers. What's up, Teddy?
So how long do you think, seriously, before we start getting robot umpires? Or you know, computer-generated balls and strike calls, because they could do that tomorrow if they wanted.
Yeah, it sounds like people are, oh, this guy's an idiot. How long? Like you said, 10 years, 15? I guarantee you within 25 years, we have some sort of AI official in some sport.
I'll take the under 25. I mean, think about the NFL. Like all these, oh, does the replay angle show? It's not like you couldn't put something, a little chip in a football and say, did it cross the goal line or didn't it?
Tennis has been the best, haven't they, Teddy? Tennis, so simple. Buddy says, hey, that was in. They're like, all right. They check. It takes 2 seconds. They pop it up on the screen. They have the digital big ball, and everyone moves on. Tennis really got it right.
And I mean, the time will come. Because, of course, it'll be a cost-cutting move as well. You know, you're going to be able to take all these union employees that are making a bunch of money, and you're going to be able to put them out of work.
Oh, I can guarantee you can get a bunch of guys from Silicon Valley that could come to baseball right now and tell them, we could do this on a camera. We don't even need to be there. We could tell you whether he's out to 1,000%, sort of like DNA. You know what I mean? We guarantee you we'll get the call right. You don't need to pay for the umpires, hotel rooms, or anything.
In the meantime, the Tigers hit the ump with the ball today.
I liked it. Okay, NFL. As far as the sides were concerned, 7-7-1. Nothing to take there. Underbettors cashed some tickets. 10-5, both Monday night games went over the number. Yet we have two teams playing tonight that were among the two of the worst offensive performances of the week in week one. Yeah, Teddy, what would you tell people from week one to week two? Because a lot of people seem to be locked in from, oh boy, what they saw. Love the Browns this year. Love the Bears this year. Kareem Hunt's going to win MVP of the league this year. People buy in pretty quickly to what they saw last, specifically in week one, Teddy.
Sure. And, of course, you know, we're going to see the Patriots giving up 40 points a game this year too, right? over the long term. But, I mean, that's the nature of the NFL. And it's such a battle in September and even in October because a lot of times the public is ahead of the wise guys because they see it and they believe it. And the wise is like, no, this team's going to be good. They'll be fine. You know, and guess what? They're not good, and they're not like Carolina last year, you know, a classic example of a team. And no, they're just not right. You know, they're not the team that they were the year before. So, you know, I mean, the game tonight with Cincy and Houston, I don't know that the problems that we saw from either of these two teams last week are going to get solved anytime soon. You know, you say don't overreact, don't underreact to the fact that the Texans have no quarterback. Their deep threat is hurt, and their offensive line is in shatters. Don't underreact to the fact that Andy Dalton is a terrible passer under pressure and that the Bengals' offensive line is in tatters right now. These are significant long-term concerns for both of these squads, and I wouldn't underreact. Certainly the markets haven't underreacted. We've seen money pour in on the under for tonight's game. I can understand why, but at the current line, there's no way. I can't bet it under 37.5. If you've missed, you know, 38 is too key of a number for totals. If you missed it, you probably missed your best opportunity.
Yeah, and the way the NFL works, both these teams will probably go up and down the field all night. And you know, it'll be 21-21 at the half. That's the way the league works. You're right. It's not as if though suddenly the Houston Texan offensive line is going to be good. I don't think they're going to get gouged for 10 sacks again this evening. But I look at this game, it's a tricky game. I don't think you can make a legitimate argument to lay 6 points with the Bengals here, even with all the negatives against the Texans. I think you can make a soft case for the Texans just because the spread is so high and because of their defense. But I'm looking at this game more from a prop perspective, and I see a prop of 4.5 sacks on the board, Teddy. So the Texans gave up 10 last week. Yeah, Deshaun Watson is mobile, but he'll also run into a couple of these tonight. And then conversely, you know, Andy Dalton is not mobile and has a propensity to not only get sacked, but fumble the ball when he gets sacked as well. I like the over 4.5 sack prop.
I wouldn't talk you out of that. I wouldn't even try to talk you out of that. Look, Watson last week dropped back 27 times. 27 dropbacks. He had a net 81 yards in that ball game. That's not a good ratio. He was sacked 4 times, and your concept about Watson as a mobile QB might run into a sack or two, I think it's very, very real.
Yeah.
Look, the Texans have no replacement for Duane Brown. You know, we're talking about a 3-time Pro Bowler, their standout tackle, and he's still holding out. And that's not going to get fixed until, unless, you know, Dwayne Brown starts playing again. So in the meantime, you know, you have a rookie QB on a short week and a bad offensive line protecting him. That's certainly problematic for anyone looking to bet under sacks. And as you mentioned, I mean, what's the strength of the Texans? Obviously, we know how good that defense is. It was the number one defense statistically in the NFL last year, although my ratings had them a notch or two lower than that. But they certainly, you know, would be a top quartile defense. You know, what's the Bengals' strength? Can we talk about the skill position speed? No. Cincy's strength is their defense. So you could get coverage sacks in this game as well. No argument with that over 4.5 sacks.
Dave Malinsky, our good friend and yours, likes the Bengals under 22.5 team total.
It makes a whole lot of sense. You know, I mean, I wouldn't argue with any. You know, and if you're
I think it's a 2017 game, Teddy. Gun to the head. And oftentimes you go, listen, I'm not playing this game. I don't like this. Tonight I'm going to say that. You know I'm a big D-gen. It'll force a pick. I have to give a pick. That's what I'm here for, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't a boiler room show, so I've got to, you know, this is my opinion on a game. But my gut and my feeling is it's a 2017 style of football game tonight. It's a close game.
Agreed. If I'm playing, I can only look to take the added value with the Houston Texans, and I can only look and that Bengals under, you know, Bengals team total under makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, because the total at 37.5, 38, not, like you said, it's kind of low, but now with the increase with the Bengals up to 6, they bumped the team total up a little bit. I don't know if the Bengals score 23 points.
Which is why you like the under. No argument.
Bears and Bucks, Teddy. It's not often, if ever. I don't know. Off the top of your head, can you ever recall an instance where an NFL team has played a game against a team that hasn't to start a season? We see this in college. But the Bears and the Bucks.
I remember there was one time that it was also a hurricane situation down in Miami that the week one games were canceled for at least the Dolphins.
Was it?
Yeah. They were playing.
Okay, yeah.
But that's a long time ago. Yeah, they, at one point they had a bye. One team had a bye every week all year. So, it was very short. Didn't last. I mean, a year or two in the NFL like that.
So it's so it's rare. So, you know, we saw the Bears, but we haven't seen the Bucks yet this year. A lot of people are excited that the Bears hung around last week. It wasn't a surprise. It was the home opener, the Falcons on the road, outdoors, grass field. Since 1984, the Bears only lost 3 season home openers by more than 7 points 3 times. You know, it's the home openers. Hope springs eternal. Now they're going to Tampa, but, you know, what do you make of this? Tampa haven't played, but Tampa also have game tape on the Bears last week. What do you make of this game? No, yeah, Mike Glennon's the quarterback that was on the Bucks.
Sure, and in general, the way those matchups are supposed to go is the team that knows his strengths and weaknesses, in theory, is supposed to have the edge. That edge would obviously go to Tampa Bay in this one. I've got my concern, and more so about the Bucs than the Dolphins, because the Dolphins got out of town and went to Oxnard. They've been practicing in the Cowboys facility, so I'm less worried about Miami's situation
when
it came to the Hurricane. But when you're talking about guys that were home and there, everything's been disrupted. Everything for Tampa Bay has been disrupted. Their practice schedule, their game schedule, their home life. That's enough of a concern for me that I have no interest.
They actually moved to Charlotte. You're right. They relocated to Charlotte for a couple of days during the floods and the hurricane.
This isn't a smooth sailing situation for the Bucs. And now, they're playing a team that hasn't. They haven't played yet. They haven't worked any kinks out. Chicago has. In their opener, the Bears, certainly from a where's this team at perspective, there was a lot of talk in Vegas before the season that the Bears were, you know, you want to talk about the Bears in the same, tone that you're going to talk about the Jets and the 49ers and maybe the Colts. And the Bears weren't that. I mean, it was very clear. John Fox has not put together a bottom feeder team. They might not be good, but this isn't a 3-win Bears team. So, no, I'm in no rush to lay it here with Tampa. None. I can understand. You know, I'm not convinced the Bears are going to play as well. I worry about who's going to catch the football for that team. You know, Chicago's one squad that cannot afford cluster injuries at receiver, and they've already had it. And, of course, Glennon, I mean, what do we call him? He's serviceable, you know, barely serviceable, but serviceable nonetheless. But he's certainly not someone who anyone is excited about saying, yeah, Mike Glennon's my guy. I'm confident he's going to carry my team to victory. On the road against a decent defense.
You mentioned the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins set up shop in Oxnard, California. to prepare for this game. So they've actually been in the LA area longer than the Chargers have been. they've been set up. A lot has been made about the small stadium and the lack of home field advantage that people think that the Chargers are going to have. It's almost an extended camp for the Miami Dolphins. A little bit different. You know, their routines were thrown out of whack, too. But they, as soon as they knew this game was done, they basically hit California and had been preparing for this game. You know, they have Jay Cutler in there. A little bit more time for Cutler right now. Chargers just played, but we got a short week. They played late, the last possible game on Monday night. Numbers coming down, though, Teddy. It looks like the Sharps or whoever the hell is betting it keeps on betting on the Dolphins right now because I'm seeing 3.5s on the board.
Yeah, I mean, 4 is still the prevailing number on Miami and the Chargers. And, I mean, certainly Jay Cutler is not a QB who many bettors are excited to put their money on. And now you have Cutler, you know, and I'm not going to call it a new system because he's familiar with what Gase does, but certainly he's a guy that didn't get a ton of work in the preseason, you know, just getting up to speed, hasn't been at game speed yet, and has a history of, you know, bettors, you know, ripping their hair out when they put their money on Jay Cutler in these type of contests. So certainly that is something of a concern here for the Miami side. But Cutler's probably got weapons as good as anything that he's seen at any point in his career with this particular Dolphins team. And, of course, he's playing a Chargers team. It's not just a short week. It's a short week. They played a late game on Monday nights. Their whole week has been slightly thrown off. While Miami's been sitting there, L.A. had to focus on a divisional opponent. And let's not forget, they were on their way to losing that game 24-7 or whatever the final would have been. And then Denver all of a sudden started turning the ball over in the fourth quarter. And then it got exciting. And, oh, here we go, you know, and they made a run. But had the Broncos not handed them a couple of touchdowns, you know, the Chargers could have lost that game by 17 or more. And it wouldn't have shocked anyone. So the other thing is StubHub Center, you know, 27,000 it seats. The smallest NFL stadium by a wide margin. Nope. It's not sold out, not even close.
Yeah, not sold out. That's and out of the 20, let's say 25,000 or 23 that'll be there, probably about 6,000 or 7,000 of them will be Dolphin fans. Got to believe. And out of a city like LA, Teddy, I live there. There's Dolphin fans there. There's a couple of thousand of them. Sometimes, listen, a smaller stadium, if they're loud and it's intense, then it doesn't really matter. And it's not like the Chargers had a great home field at the Jack at the Murph, anyways, right? But without being stated, you have a small stadium and it's half empty and it's sort of apathy and people aren't really there to see you. You know what it reminds me of? I think you're going to see, Teddy. You'll have a few. It's funny. I was doing a show last night and I said maybe there'll be some hardcore Charger fans that didn't give up on them coming from San Diego. And guys in the chat from San Diego said, no, we did. We're not going up there. No one in LA cares about the Chargers. So you'll get some Dolphin fans and then you'll just sort of get the novelty. Hey, let's go to an NFL game. A lot like people go to Brooklyn Net games. They're not going to a Brooklyn Net game. They're just going to an NBA game.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. But let's not forget, the Rams are the draw in L.A. Okay, the Rams had a fan base, something of a fan base there.
Maybe, all 45,000 of them, I know.
Well, listen, the Rams are the draw. They start their home game starts 20 minutes after the Chargers game. And, oh, by the way, the Rams, no, they didn't sell out last week in their home opener. They didn't come close. Selling out last week in their home opener. So, you know, the good team, the team that the guys are excited in LA to see, didn't draw 50,000. What are the Chargers going to? I mean, I'm interested in watching this game as much for seeing how few Chargers fans are there because, yeah, they bought a billboard. The fans bought a billboard that ripped the NFL for, you know, taking the team out of San Diego. And obviously, when you move the team to a city that doesn't give a bleep about them being there, you know, I mean, it's not what we're used to seeing from the NFL. The NFL tends to make good business decisions, and this situation with the Chargers, you know, it's been a cluster from the beginning.
The biggest game in L.A. this weekend is Texas Longhorns and the USC Trojans. Before we get you out of here, Teddy, we've only got a minute or two. New Mexico and Boise State, heartbreaking loss for moneyline players such as me last week against Washington State. I thought Washington State were overrated. I told people there's no way they should be favored by this much. Patted myself on the back all game long. I thought I was a genius. At least I covered the point spread. Now you get New Mexico rolling in here. I don't have to tell you, Teddy. Boise State, you know, it was Chris Peterson. You know, they're not the same program that they used to be. 1-10-1 against the spread. Last 12 games were laying points as a home chalk on this blue field. But what do you make of this Bob Davey under investigation stuff? Kind of a shock. And I got to, you know, I'm going on a limb here. I don't buy it, man. Bob Davey's a class act. The guy's been around forever. I was poking a little deeper today. I was seeing former players, guys that played there last year and stuff, said, I don't know what anyone's talking about. The guy's a nice guy. I don't know what this is. I would be a little concerned when I saw the compromised drug program. You know, maybe he was looking the other way. I can understand that. But I can't picture Bob Davey punching kids and stuff like that. Can you?
No. And of course, you know, we live in a world where it's not even an accusation. It's an allegation.
I know. And it could be one kid that didn't get playing time and didn't like this. Exactly.
Yeah, where all of a sudden that becomes truth instantly. You know, there's no trial, no conviction, no evidence. Just, and that to me is a big concern societally when it comes to this game, though. Because, well, whatever, we could talk about, you know, society did this, society did that. You know, we can go on forever with that. Our goal and our job is to give people good advice. The Boise State defense has allowed 20 points in two games this year. The Boise State offense has allowed 21 points in two games this year. They give up two interception return touchdowns and a fumble return TD. Davey's been great in this role, and the Lobos have been great in this role. As big dogs, double-digit dogs, I got them, 8-3 against the number of the last 11. They've certainly given Boise all kinds of problems, you know, including an outright upset win as 31-point dogs on their last visit to the Blue Turf. Of course, you know, if New Mexico is going to, I don't think New Mexico has a chance to stop Boise State. I think that, you know, regardless of how banged up Brett Rippon is, the Lobos defense a little bit slow, a little bit undersized at corner, and that Boise's going to get there. But New Mexico certainly has had success moving the football against that Broncos defense, and it's not a defense that I trust against a triple option attack. And, you know, I know there's a coach that's done more with less than Bob Davey has. And the Lobos, in my mind, would be live dogs here. I'd rather take the points than lay them with the Broncos.
All right, we got to get out of here. You can check Teddy out. Follow him on Twitter, at Teddy Covers. You can find him over at sportsmemo.com, his plays. You can watch his daily video over at SBR YouTube page as well with Paulie Howard. Sports Bit, always a pleasure, Teddy.
Cheers.
There's Ted Savransky with us. Take a quick break. Warren Sharp joins us next. We continue talking NFL football.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We'll talk some college football in a couple of moments. Joe Lisi, go for the twos. Joe Lisi will join us in co-host of College Football Today. I join both Rich and Joe every Saturday morning on the Fantasy Sports Television Network and the Dish Network, Channel 266, with my College Football Best Bets of the Day. We talked a little bit about the college game on the board with Ted Savransky. We talked about the Houston Texans and the Bengals game. Let's continue that NFL conversation right now with one of the best in the business, and literally, pardon the pun, but one of the sharpest in the business. His website, sharpfootballanalysis.com, his NFL previews, rapidly becoming one of the more popular NFL previews for analysts and bettors alike. The one and only Warren Sharp joins us. Warren, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Obviously, wish we could join you talking about a different game than the game tonight, but definitely looking forward to week two. A lot of really good matchups this week.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, Warren, because the National Football League heard the criticism of these Thursday night divisional tilts and said, you know, all right, we're going to mix it up a little bit. It won't just be division rivals, and we're going to try to give you some good football game. And, you know, their intentions were good here with the Houston Texans and the Cincinnati Bengals, but like my father told me when I was very young, may he rest in peace, the road to hell was paved with good intentions. But when they booked this game, hey, they figure week two, Texans-Bengals, going to be a good game. And I don't know if it's a good game, but it's kind of an interesting game. And the loser of this game is in a lot of trouble because the Houston Texans go to Foxborough next week to play the Pats, and the Bengals go to Green Bay to play the Packers next week. So it's very conceivable that the loser of this game is 0-3.
No, I think you're giving these schedule makers way too much credit. I mean, last year's game almost ruined Christmas Eve. The year before that, the final score was 10-6. If these guys can't figure out that these two teams, when they square off, it's just bad football, I have no idea why they would marquee this thing as the first in-season Thursday night game. But they're not doing themselves any favors if they're trying to get themselves some ratings. Because, look, they couldn't plan that, you know, Dwayne Brown was going to hold out and the Houston Texans line was going to be terrible. And then they'd suffer this widespread rash of injuries so that all their tight ends are basically knocked out. But they did pit these two teams against one another. But let's focus on, you know, what we're seeing tonight. We're seeing that these two teams, I think the Bengals are going to be able to have some success with their pass rush. I mean, they didn't get a lot of opportunities last week against the Ravens because Joe Flacco threw only 17 passes because the Ravens were up the entire game and could rely on their defense. But the Houston Texans are probably going to have to throw some more pass attempts here than Joe Flacco did last week. And that's going to provide opportunity because this offensive line is absolutely terrible with the loss of Dwayne Brown and all these tight ends. They don't have those extra blockers. It's really going to be interesting to see them try to get something going through the passing game.
Yeah, I imagine there's going to be a lot of rolling out, right? And I brought this up earlier, actually, Ward. One of the props that I like a lot in this football game tonight is over sacks, and it's 4.5, which is actually the standard number for the most part. Sometimes you'll see an even 4, but 4.5 is actually a pretty standard number. And you consider they gave up 10 sacks, so I don't expect to give up 10 sacks. But people talk about the mobility of Deshaun Watson helping. And I brought it up earlier, and I'd like to see if you agree with this. Yeah, he's mobile, but he's also young and raw. And I can see Deshaun Watson running into sacks. His mobility, I mean, if you're patient in a pocket, you know, you can weather the storm. And you'll see younger quarterbacks will use their legs. They'll sort of panic. In college, you know, he'll think, oh, I can get to the corner. And he'll find out very quickly in the NFL he can't get to the corner. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ran into a few sacks on his own due to his mobility, actually. His strength will be his weakness, actually.
Yeah, that does tend to happen with these mobile quarterbacks where they will hold on to the ball a little bit longer. Or like you said, they'll kind of scramble one direction. They won't find anything that they like there, and they'll turn back and they'll run right into somebody. So you know, their legs try to buy them time, but then it ultimately costs them in the end.
Exactly. Your mind can buy you more time in the end. That's the way I wanted to put it. Exactly.
Right. Exactly. I mean, the goal for quarterbacks, I mean, obviously you want somebody who can move around in case there is pressure, but the goal needs to be eyes downfield, go through your progressions, try to understand what the defense is doing before the snap so that you can accurately get the ball out quickly to the proper receiver. A lot of these quarterbacks, they don't make those pre-snap reads accurately enough. They're then therefore cost themselves more time in the pocket, and they try to work through their progressions. They're just not as adept at that at their age, and then they struggle and then try to run around, and then they get sacked. But I mean, he'll probably have, you know, 35 rushing yards, but he will take a number of sacks as well.
So what do you think about this? What do you think about the number? You bring up the tight end situation, and it is a big problem because at least they can just stick the big bodies on the end of the line, and they only have one active tight end in uniform this evening. The totals, it was 38. I'm hearing there's some 37.5 pop up right now. It's hard to bet an under when the total is this low, Warren. Any interest in the team totals, first half, sides, totals? What's your take before we move on to the next game?
Yeah, I'm pretty bland on this game. I don't really have a lot there. I mean, the Houston Texans under 14.5 team total could be of interest, but personally, I'm looking at other investment opportunities. I don't really see enough value here to really merit anything, and I've moved on from this one.
There were so many bad offense performances in week one. To me, the New York Giants aren't getting ripped enough for their putrid performance. You and I have talked a lot over the years, Warren, about those Cowboys-Giants games, those Sunday nighters. Historically, have been high scoring. Pretty impressive. Dallas's young defense answered their first test. They were flying around. They looked like a college defense. It's very aggressive, fast to the ball, etc. But the Giants' passing attack brought absolutely nothing to the table whatsoever. We've got an interesting football game here between the Dallas Cowboys and the Denver Broncos this week.
Yeah, we do. I mean, first and foremost, talking about Dallas, look, I don't think that defense is as good as it showed. This Giants team is completely lost without Odell Beckham there. And they're saying that Odell Beckham is dealing with a 6 to 8 week ankle injury, and he's only been recovering for 24 days. So, I mean, who knows if he's going to play Monday night, but it's probably unlikely he's going to be close to 100% yet. And without him, this team is totally lost because they don't have a run game. They don't have a deep passing game because the offensive line can't protect enough to allow Eli to do those deeper drops. So much of their offense last year was these short pass attempts to Odell on slants, crossing routes to where he could take them to the house. Without him, this offense is just a disaster. And it didn't surprise me at all that for them to struggle as much as they did in Dallas. Dallas going out to Denver, it's going to be an interesting matchup that I think is going to be decided one spot and one spot only, and that is how well the Denver Broncos can stop the run game. Because I think Denver's secondary is going to be capable enough to limit what the Cowboys passing offense wants to do. But to me, it's, you know, Melvin Gordon was held to just over three yards per carry against this Broncos defense. And I expected Melvin Gordon to have a little bit better day because the Broncos' weakness is their run defense. Their pass defense is very good. Run defense, not so good. That's how you can keep games close against the Broncos. But they held him to 3 yards per carry. So I don't know if that was a Melvin Gordon thing because he has failed to exceed our expectations from a yards per carry standpoint his rookie year, his second year, and now possibly into his third year. Ezekiel Elliott doesn't really have that problem. So that's the matchup that's going to determine it because I do see the Broncos offense, as bad as I think Simeon is and was last year, having some semblance of success against the Cowboys defense, especially if Orlando Scandrick, dealing with a broken hand, is unable to play. He's their best cornerback, and the rest of their cornerbacks are not very good. So I do see some edges for Denver in this game if they can stop the run game. But I think it's going to be a really fascinating game, one that I'm a little surprised that Dallas is laying 2 points on the road in. It's very difficult to win at altitude in Denver early in the season.
Yeah, it's a good point, early in the season. Not in condition yet. All right, we've only got a couple of minutes. Time always flies, Ward. Two of the higher-profile games, or I should say the highest totals on the board, the Patriots and the Saints. Saints got shut down on Monday night against the Vikings. We all know what happened last Thursday with the Patriots and the Chiefs. And then you got the Packers and the Falcons, a NFC Conference Championship rematch. Both the totals opened up at 53.5. The Pats and the Saints has been bet up to 55.5 right now. Packers-Falcons only up to 54. But I have noticed as well, Falcons were 2.5 all week. I'm seeing even threes right now, and the Pats are up to 6.5, Warren. What do you make of these games? Is it too obvious? Are they track meets or are they traps?
That's a good question. I do think that the injuries to the offensive line of Green Bay are going to be problematic, potentially. We'll see if those guys can come back. In the other game, I'm really fascinated to see if the Patriots continue this kind of abnormal style of just chucking the ball really deep down the field for no apparent reason when they were having a lot of success on the shorter passing routes. So I'm really interested to see what they end up deciding to do from that perspective. But look, the Saints defense can be vulnerable, and the the Patriots defense, likewise. We've seen them have tons of troubles containing just the Kansas City offense. Now they have to go against the Saints offense. They have extra time to prepare. I don't know that's going to help them tremendously defensively. They should look better than what they looked like last week, but they still could have some problems. And the Saints, if this game is a higher scoring game, you know, it's hard to imagine that the Patriots would drop this game. I don't see that happening, but there is a chance in a high scoring game that adds a lot of variance to things. If the Saints are able to put up 27, 30 points in the game, you're asking the Patriots to be able to match them, and I totally see that they could do that, but there's also chances where some mistakes, like we saw, you know, they go for it twice on fourth down, they don't make it, could play into things here. So I think that both those games should be pretty close games and should be pretty fascinating games and should be pretty exciting games.
Warren Sharp, sharpfootballanalysis.com is his website. He's a great follow at Sharp Football on Twitter as well. For you fantasy players, too, Warren's got great statistical information to help you from a fantasy perspective, not just a betting perspective. It's never too late to get his preview magazine. It'll be a great guide for you all season long. Warren, great to have you back in rotation. May the winners be yours. Thanks for the time.
All right, good luck this weekend, Gabe.
There's Warren Sharp with us. Take a quick break. We talk college football. Joe Lisi next.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I'm Gabriel Moretz. We've talked NFL football for the most part on the program today. We talked a little bit about this New Mexico and Boise State game, but let's bring in a man that lives and breathes college football. You can watch him right here on the Fantasy Sports Television Network, Radio Network, and the Dish Network Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Alongside Rich Sermonello, College Football Today. I join him at 10:40 and 11:40 a.m. with my best bets of the day. And last week, one of my best bets of the day, actually, was Boise State getting the points against Wazoo. I told the boys, I don't think Washington State should be this favored by this many points. I actually took Boise on the money line as well. It was a heartbreaker. But Boise are right back at it tonight. Joe Lisi joins us right now. Always a pleasure, Joe. How you doing?
Looking forward to another great weekend of college football. Great pick with Boise State, Gabe. Doesn't get better than that, does it?
Well, I'll tell you what, we got Boise State on the board tonight, and considering we've, you know, listen, you're a big college guy, so I'm sure you're intrigued to see how Deshaun Watson performs tonight in his first start with the Houston Texans. But, you know, even though we have an NFL game tonight, I expect this New Mexico-Boise State game to be a pretty entertaining one. But obviously, let's get to the elephant in the room right now. Shocking news out of New Mexico that Bob Davies under investigation for a player mistreatment, which really comes as a surprise to me. Now, for the record, former players that are immediately stepping up are saying, this is crazy talk. I don't know what anyone's talking about. The thing that catches my eye is compromised drug program and weird stuff with drug tests that have gone on there as well. I'm going to reserve judgment, but for my money, and I think a lot of college coaches are low-life scumbags, I don't think Bob Davies is a low-life scumbag. I'll give Bob Davies and Coach Davies the benefit of the doubt here, Joe.
I'm with you, Gabe. They were my pick to win their half of the division in the Mountain West Conference. And from what I've seen, especially in that bowl win over UTSA last year, the players seem to love Bob Davies. So I'm going to hold off judgment as well. And I think they're a live dog tonight on the road in Boise.
Yeah, you know, Boise's 1-10-1 against the spread, their last 12 attempts when covering the number. Bob Davie, man, he's been great against the number when getting double-digit points on the road as an underdog. 12-2, guys, the last of 14. People are a little bit down on this Lobo team, but we can't forget they beat them on this blue turf 2 years ago outright. What's the quarterback situation tonight? That's Cozart going, right?
Yeah, it's Cozart for Brett Rippon. He's banged up. So Cozart, who's a mobile quarterback, got a lot of action in the second half of that game last week against Washington State, will get the start. And this is a New Mexico team that's coming off a 30-28 loss to New Mexico State. It's a rivalry game. More balanced offense. They're rushing for 217, passing for 238 through the air. But I expect them to be up in this ballgame. It is a Mountain West Conference game, so that's the difference for me. I think they strike the outright upset on the road.
Wow. Again, another upset. You know, Cozart's an athletic guy. He reminds me of Tyrod Taylor. He makes plays and he does really stupid things. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he did last week. It's like, oh, wow, look at that bullet. And then the next play, it's like, dude, like, why did you step out of bounds? Like, what are you doing? Like, it was very, very baffling. Air Force in Michigan. The bettors are liking the Flyboys here. It's down to 23.5. I'm a Michigan guy. And I know Harbaugh's not going to run the score up on a military school. He's going to show restraint and respect. Plus, with that being stated, I think the Falcons can give them just a little bit of a problem and eat up some clock. Michigan have Big Ten play coming up the following week. What do you make of this one in the point spread? Do you think Michigan beat them by 30-40, or do you think it's a closer game by 17-20?
Yeah, I think Michigan dominates this game, Gabe. They had a lackluster effort last week against Cincinnati. We spoke about it, that Luke Fickell was a defensive coordinator, and Air Force is coming off a bye week, much like Stanford did. I think that'll affect the offensive line continuity. And two factors, Michigan's defensive front seven, to me, is the difference. You need big physical defensive tackles that could disrupt the timing of the triple option. And when you look at Air Force's defense entering this year, only one starter back, I think this is a real dominant effort for the Wolverines. They run all over the Falcons. I think they put up a 50 spot. 55-17, Michigan wins this ballgame.
Joe says Michigan lay the chalk. Michigan blows them out. Intriguing game here, Tennessee and Florida. You know, McElwain's going to start to be on the hot seat soon. The honeymoon's going to end shortly. He can't be 0-2. Losing to Michigan in a fashion that they did. They were off last week, so here they are now. They're laying 4.5 points against a Tennessee team that, you know, last year Tennessee were hyped. This year they're not. What do you make of this SEC East matchup?
Yeah, I can't put my eggs in Butch Jones's basket. I have to go with the better secondary, even though Florida lost that game to Michigan. They held Wilton Spate to 46% completion percentage. To me, that's the difference. Dormady goes on the road. Swamp is a very difficult place to play. I'm taking the Gators. You look at Tennessee's rush defense, allowing over 300 rushing yards on the ground. Tennessee gets healthy. They win this ballgame. Florida gets healthy. They win this ballgame by double digits.
Florida's been pretty secretive about everything. You know, we saw that going into the Michigan game with the quarterbacks. I think Franks looked like the best guy. To me, if you're going to play Zaire, then leave him out there, right? That's one of these deals. They got to make a decision, just leave the damn guy out there. But I would go with Franks personally if I was then, Felipe Franks. And what are you hearing as far as the suspended players coming back? I'm hearing that most of them are going to be back for this game, actually. McElwain can't afford to lose.
Yeah, they're listed as doubtful. Some of them, I mean, we don't know. I mean,
I know it's tough.
That they're not going to play, and you still have to give the edge to Florida. I mean, the last time Tennessee won in the Swamp was 2003, Gabe. That's why I like Florida in this matchup. To me, I think Tennessee's going to have problems moving the football.
I've been around a while, Joe, so the fact that they're being so secretive about it means they're going to play. Because if they put it out there, people would bitch. Oh, these guys, because something happened in a strip club, and it could have been serious, actually. So people would, you know, I'm telling you, that's what it means, Joe. They're just secretly, oh, yeah, they're playing. 30 seconds, Joe. Louisville, Clemson, who wins?
Clemson wins this ballgame by double digits because of their third down defense, holding opposing offenses to 30%. They contain Lamar Jackson and win by 10 to 13 points.
I agree with you. I like the Clemson Tigers to win this game outright as well. Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello, Saturday morning talking college football. Great stuff. They got former players coming on. I come on with my best bets. It's a great show, 9 to 12. Keep it locked right here on the Fantasy Sports Network on Saturday morning. Always a pleasure, Joe.
Love the show, Gabe. Anytime.
Joe Lisi. We'll see Joe on Saturday morning, and we'll come back with my plays of the day next.
In 2016, Scott Engel predicted an impressive second season from Melvin Gordon. Jake Seeley recommended Jordan Howard. Bobby McMahon forecasted a Jay Ajayi breakthrough. George Kurtz saw a big year coming from Matt Ryan. And Joe Galina picked Rishard Matthews as one of his top sleepers. These predictions turned fantasy owners into champions, and the same crew returns this year with more savvy calls in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package at rotoexperts.com. Don't miss the calls that create winners. Register now and enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
It's time for our plays of the day, and I'm sure a lot of you are thinking that, oh, he's going to take the Cincinnati Bengals for sure, even though he said he's never taking the Bengals ever again. Wrong! Wrong! Give me the Houston Texans, plus 6 points. You know what? I think people are underestimating Deshaun Watson a little bit. I have confidence in Deshaun Watson, but I don't have a ton of confidence in the Texans as a whole and that offensive line. But listen, I like the props better than the side here, but I'm going to be on Houston Texans. Small play, plus 6 on the Texans. Deshaun Watson, there's going to be a lot of dink and dunk, all right, with Deshaun in this football game. I think his quarterback props are a little bit too low. We're getting into college type of numbers right now. Give me over 18.5 completions. He had 11 completions in the second half alone last week. Total passing yards, 205 yards. That's low, man. Even Tyrod Taylor went over that number last week. Give me the over. Andy Dalton, 240.5 passing yards. You know what? I'm not betting on the Bengals. I'm betting against Andy Dalton. He's not throwing for 241 passing yards tonight. Let's go under the number there. Sacks, love this. I've already bet this, bet it pretty big. Let's go over 4.5 sacks in this football game. Long field goal over 44.5. Give me Sheriff Lobo plus the points and over 58.5. May the winners be yours.